TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Jeremy Corbyn with Yanis Varoufakis. Part 2 of 2. Rescuing Democracy by Reviving Socialism. A conversation at the Edinburgh Book Festival, August 20, 2018. Rescuing democracy from autocracy has become a worldwide challenge. How to curb the power of corporations and banks. And the parallel fights for education, housing, and health. And the resistance against privatization across Europe and the Americas. And how to stem the tide of right-wing movements, be they in the US, Germany, France, Poland, Italy, Greece, Hungary, and too many other places. Familiar names show up in an effort to create a cross-border countervailing movement to support democracy and rescue the values and traditions of socialism as countervailing force to capitalism. In part one of this conversation, you met the British Labour MP, Jeremy Corbyn, and the former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis. And the name of Bernie Sanders came up. Yanis Varoufakis is a Greek economist, academic, and politician. He was a Syriza member of the Hellenic Parliament and served as Minister of Finance from January to July 2015. He resigned in protest over the imposition of structural adjustment and bailout loans on the Greek people. In February 2016, Varoufakis co-founded the Democracy in Europe Movement 2025, DiEM25. And subsequently backed a Remain in the European Union vote in the UK's Brexit referendum of 2016. Jeremy Corbyn is a leader of the British Labour Party and of the opposition in Parliament since 2015. He identifies as a democratic socialist. Corbyn advocates reversing austerity cuts to public services and welfare funding made since 2010, and proposes to undo the privatization of public utilities and the railways. He supports non-interventionism and unilateral nuclear disarmament. In the snap 2017 general election in Britain, Labour under Corbyn again finished as the second largest party in Parliament and increased their share of the popular vote to 40%. Corbyn and Varoufakis were recorded on August 20, 2018 at the Edinburgh Book Festival. Here is Jeremy Corbyn.
So what do progressive people saying in Germany, in France, USA, Greece, Spain, wherever, they're actually saying much the same thing. You cannot go on diminishing the role of the public service of the state without paying a price in poverty, inequality, and without paying a price with people's lives being wasted. And so surely it has to be the question of what the community as a whole does in provision of housing security, health security, education security, and invests in our future, invests in the infrastructure you need, the technology you need, and the development of new manufacturing processes. We can't run the whole world just on service economy.
Absolutely. But in order to bring together the progressives from Germany, from the United States, from Mexico, from Italy, from Greece, from Britain, we need to create a political infrastructure, a movement that actually does that, not simply inviting each other to have little chats and going to each other's conferences. But you see, the bankers are internationalists.
Yeah.
They are completely united. They have a bankers internationale. The fascists are increasingly united. Steve Bannon is in Europe organizing the neo-fascist international between Salvini, Orban, the Polish government, the Kurz government in Austria. I'm sure he's operating here. He even had a meeting with Boris Johnson. I don't know why he did that, but anyway, he did. We need a progressive international by which to counter them. We need to go beyond the Brexit debate. Because even if Brexit happens, even if hard Brexit happens, there is nothing stopping us if we are coordinated. To have, for instance, you're going, and I'm very pleased to see that in your, I was very pleased to read this in your manifesto, you're going to create a new public investment bank, a national investment bank. Well, there's nothing stopping your new national investment bank and the European Investment Bank collaborating, issuing bonds together in order to create a fund for large-scale investments in green transition technologies that would create good quality jobs. And the Bank of England, on the one hand, and the European Central Bank, on the other, also collaborating in order to be standing by in the financial markets to purchase those bonds to make sure that the interest rates and the cost of borrowing for the green transition New Deal for Europe, indeed, for North America as well.
The whole point behind the National Investment Bank is that we lever in other investment as well in order to improve infrastructure and deal with the massive inequalities across the UK between English regions, between Scotland and the rest, between Wales and the rest, Northern Ireland, and so on. And unless we do that, then what do we continue doing?
That's right.
Having badly paid people working on 0 hours contracts, and you have a sort of Sport Direct as the model of employment, or do you have something very much better and very different? And I don't pretend any of this is going to be easy to do, but I want our government, a Labour government, to be measured against the reduction in poverty, measured against reductions in homelessness, measured in reductions in the number of people dropping out of school, university, and so on, and about improving people's lives, improving the quality of our environment and the quality of our lives. At the moment, we have this claim that there's high levels of employment in Britain. The reality is there's been frozen wages for 10 years, and the quality of employment for many people is falling. I spent part of this afternoon talking to a group of people in Glasgow who are working in the hospitality sector on 0 hours contracts. And they have this absolute fear of the phone ringing. They're demanded to come in that day, and they're ill, the child's sick, all the sort of stuff that happens to all of us every day means they can't go in. They then get written out completely, and they've lost even the chance of working on a 0 hours contract. That is inhuman.
Absolutely.
That means their whole life is dominated by waiting for the phone to ring. Is the phone going to ring? Is it going to ring? That's just wrong. And so that kind of employment practice has got to end, and we are absolutely determined to do it, which is why we would go further than a lot of European rules on employment rights. From day one, full rights at work. That'd be a good start.
Absolutely. And at the same time as the zero-hour contract Uberized environment that you just described, in this country, you have about £850 billion sitting idly in the City of London, bidding up asset prices and house prices in the south of England and not doing anything productive. Your National Investment Bank would be able, especially if it's coordinated with similar public investment banks in Europe, to soak up that liquidity by issuing bonds and putting it directly into the creation of good quality jobs in the green transition
sector. And good quality housing, because at the moment the housing investment, actually some of which goes into building luxury apartments in London and the South East that are sold off plan, are used as a cash machine for those that have bought them, and sometimes they're bought and sold before they're even built, bought and sold several times before they're built. In the meantime, the housing waiting lists are at record level all over the rest of the country for council housing or housing association properties. And so there has to be a change to the regional imbalance in England as well as between the nations, and there has to be investment in secure housing. Insecure housing has a very bad effect on children, particularly, a very bad effect on people's lives, and also it's very expensive. So people are paying more to live in insecurity. That can't be right.
Absolutely. Could I invite you, before we open it up, and we will open it up very soon, before we do this, could I invite you to be a bit more ambitious?
Okay. In what respect?
You have a great burden on you to be the leader not just of a progressive democratic socialist movement in the United Kingdom, but also beyond the limits of the United Kingdom. People out there, and you know that, in Europe, in America, in Latin America, are looking for inspiration and leadership beyond the shores of these islands. Would it not be important and quite marvelous, actually, to create that progressive international with Bernie Sanders, with the new president-elect in Mexico, with us in Europe, in order to put forward a hopeful message to the people of Britain, to the people of Europe, and so on, people of India, in South Africa, that we need an international New Deal. Because all the problems that you described regarding Britain, of poverty, low investment in the things that, in the good quality jobs, the private debt situation in the United Kingdom, I was looking at data about private debt in this country. You have a massive private debt crisis. You don't have a public debt crisis. You have a private debt crisis. Mm-hmm. When more than half of the families in this country, especially working class families, need credit cards in order to put food on the table, you have a serious private debt issue. All these are problems that we have in Greece, they have in Mexico, we have in Italy. And it's a bit like climate change. You need to act upon them in this country, but it's not enough. To lift these boats, to empower the working class in Britain, to have investment in good quality jobs, it would help to do the same thing in Europe and the United States. This is why we need to coordinate. Yeah. And this is why we need people like Jeremy Corbyn to show leadership beyond the shores of this country.
But we don't frame it around the individual, frame it about what we as
but
collectively,
you're here.
As people
I don't
can
have the
do.
Labour Party here with me, I have you.
Okay, all right, thank you. but it is important, and you're right, that we build that sense of international connection, because you're quite right, others are very internationally connected in a better way than many of us are. I have spent a lot of time talking to a lot of people across Europe over the past 3 years. We are in touch with Bernie Sanders and his campaign, and I'm delighted to say that the new president of Mexico, who I know, I consider him a friend, has invited me to his inauguration, and he has this massive opportunity, having won historically a big majority in the presidential election, to actually challenge the levels of inequality in his country, which are probably the most unequal society in the world. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a tough competition, but I should imagine they're somewhere somewhere well up there at the top. And so you simply
Greece
say...
Greece is doing pretty well in that competition. One of the few things we're good at.
Coming up on the rails, eh? So there is the whole movement of people saying, well, actually, I don't want to be worse off than my parents' generation. I don't want my children to be worse off. And I don't want the insecurity of knowing that somewhere or other, if I get ill, I've got to find the money to pay for a hospital treatment. Talk to anybody in the United States of what it's like to get ill, unless they've got some incredibly fortuitous private insurance system. They're absolutely terrified. Yes. Of the bill they're going to get.
It means
and the
bankruptcy.
Burden on their families, the bankruptcies that follow, the poverty that follows, the foreclosures and all that follow as a result of it. People got to understand just what an achievement setting up our National Health Service was and the principles surrounding our welfare state. They're all under attack.
This is why the moment Greece went bankrupt, the troika of creditors, the first thing they attacked was our National Health Service, which was never as good as yours, but they looked at it as a target that had to be brought down symbolically with menace and with ferocity.
Isn't there a constant philosophical debate between the individual and the collective? We want people to be individual, we want people to be imaginative, we want people to be excited for themselves and what they can achieve. But sometimes that go so far, you forget that you actually do need your community, your society, the collective around you. It's the collective that achieves things. It's the collective that delivers.
And that, well, you're talking to a Greek, and this.
Well,
this,
you started all this democracy business, didn't you?
Yeah, and it's actually not
although
just
it was
the
a
democracy
very
business.
Though it was a very flawed democracy.
It was the definition of the autonomous individual, which is so profoundly different between the ancient Athenians and the British establishment. The British establishment has this view of the autonomous individual as the lord in the manor house with very well-fortified fences. So the individual is well-defined, and it's well-defined in juxtaposition to everybody else, to the other, to the community. Yeah. The rest are seen as a threat to individual liberty in this country. Whereas in ancient Athens, all the philosophers, the aristocrats, the democrats, the left wing, the right wing, they agreed on one thing, that the only way of realizing your potential as an autonomous individual is through dialogue with someone, by catching your reflection in the eyes of the other. So this Yes. So you're knocking on an open door.
There was a bit of a problem with Greek democracy. It relied on other people, namely slaves, to do a lot of work.
And women were not considered citizens, and the migrants didn't have the right to vote.
Migrants and slaves didn't have the rights, and women had no rights at all.
So the slaves were not human. They were not considered even to be human. They were considered to be things, objects. The women were human but had no rights. And the metics, the migrants, were simply, the riffraff. The way that UKIP looks at people like...
But they did all the work.
The slaves did all the work.
Slaves and the migrants, yeah.
But what is also interesting, however, is that nevertheless, despite all these... demerits of Greek Athenian democracy, it was the first time and probably the last where the majority who were the poor controlled the government.
That's true, and there were also differences in democratic centres around Greece, wasn't it? It wasn't all of a single type. There wasn't
one democracy, really.
Well, there was Athens, but there was also other towns and other cities that did things a bit differently.
Yeah, like Sparta, which was a despotism beyond belief. But
others were not all despotic.
Let's open it up. But you know what the interesting thing is? The Spartans, who were almost fascistic, nevertheless, they were feminist. Women had the right to a number of activities that they never did in Athens. But anyway...
I've never heard anything so nice about the Spartans before. Well done. Well done.
Okay, so let's take some questions.
We seem to have the most inept and incompetent government in Westminster probably in our lifetimes. My question is, why is Labour not streets ahead in the polls? Because you bloody well should be.
Okay, thank you for the questions. Young people are intrinsically interested in their own lives and their own future. And I think that access to social media do give people an incredible opportunity to relate to each other, to discuss things with each other, and actually to explore ideas and things in a way that they never would have done before. And I think social media is an amazingly strong form of communication. And it is very much communication by young people with each other. And newspaper readership is declining very rapidly, and it's much more older people that buy and read newspapers. And I think that's an important factor in all this. But it's also young people growing up in a sense of insecurity as well. The levels of mental health stress, the housing stress, the education stress, the job stress is massive amongst a lot of young people. They don't have the sense of security that other generations did. I mean, I personally didn't go to university. I'm not claiming any great hardship, but that was my choice. But had I wanted to and chosen to and gained entry somewhere, it would have been free for me. I would have got a grant, no fees. It would have been there, and there was that sense of security which young people don't have at the moment. And so a lot of what we were saying was about really trying to create a stronger sense of security for young people and also unleashing that imagination that's there. Young people are interested in politics. Politics wasn't interested in young people for a very long time. That surely has to be the key to it. On your point about the incompetence of the government, well, yes, they are incompetent, but they're also wrong. Wrong in what they're doing and wrong in the direction they're doing. We, as a party, obviously have... a different approach, a completely different approach, and the manifesto we put forward was a transformational agenda for this country, and we have done well, but not well enough. We didn't quite win the general election, but we had a big increase in the Labour vote from previous elections, the highest Labour vote for a very long time. And indeed, the future for socialist, social democratic and left parties across Europe is, the message is very obvious. Where they go along with austerity, go along with a managerial approach of deflating or diminishing the role of the state, then they lose support, and lose support in a very big way. I'm not complacent about this. We've got to do much better. We've got to do as much campaigning as we possibly can. And we also have to have a policy development process, which we're developing, which does involve a very large number of people putting their views forward on all the issues that we put forward. But I tell you this, when the general election was called last year, we were written off by just about everybody. We mounted a campaign for the many, not the few, went out there and took that message out there. And once the broadcasting rules kicked in, the public as a whole were able on broadcast media to hear at least what we were saying in the general principles of that election campaign. And the result was what it was. I don't think this government can last that long. We will push them all the way we can, and we're absolutely ready for an election whenever we can get one, and we're determined to do it. And above all, we're absolutely determined to win it as well, so that we do transform this society.
So, we are going to have this gentleman here, because he's really outstretched his arm to an extent that is medically problematic. And we want a lady. Yes, up there. But before you start speaking, until the microphone comes to you, the beauty of being a foreigner is that I can speak the truth without any repercussions. Jeremy Corbyn, just before the general election, suffered a second coup d'etat within his own party. And to have brought home the Labour Party with a 40% vote is a majestic performance. It is a performance that needs to be applauded as a major triumph. Okay.
As an incoming Prime Minister faced with competing demands for expenditure and for investment, how would you assess the expenditure and investment needs of the social care sector?
The social care system across the UK is poor. The numbers of people that are stuck in hospital because social care is not available for them when they should be discharged from hospital and go into a care supportive environment, they end up either staying in hospital, which doesn't do them any good and isn't any good for the hospital either, or they cannot get the social care they need. So somebody in the family has to give up work and care for often an older, high dependency relative. And it's nearly always women who end up losing their jobs and their careers because of the failure of the social care system. I'm absolutely determined that we have a social care system worthy of the name that does ensure that all those who need social care get that social care, and you don't impoverish the family in the process of doing that. It is expensive, but it's very important to actually do that, because some of you would have read the original National Health Service Act of 1946. And even now, it's an inspiring document to read. In the preamble, in the first paragraph, it talks about doctors, talks about hospitals, but it also talks about social care and mental health. It sees it as a comprehensive. And Nye Bevan, who founded the NHS, was also the Minister of Housing, and he said, good housing leads to good health. You cannot have good health in a polluted environment, insecure, poor quality housing, low pay and poverty. Good health is a combination of clean air, clean water, sufficient food to eat, but also a sense of mental well-being, as well as obviously the medical needs you need to support people who are going through an illness or a condition that needs medical help. But health is not a specific, it is a generality as well.
I will take one more question from the lady here in the middle. While the microphone is coming to you, let me say that in 1967, we had our own fascist coup d'etat, and many Democrats from Greece were given refuge in Chile by Allende.
Yeah.
And then in 1974, by the time democracy was restored in Greece, we return the favor to many of them. Solidarity is important, but that does not hide the fact, firstly, that in the end we failed to prevent the two coups, and secondly, the international oligarchy is now staging coups, not by means of the tanks, but by means of the banks, as it happened in Greece in July of 2015.
I mean, there were indeed Spanish people that had escaped from Franco in Spain and went to Chile, and then Franco died shortly after the coup in Chile, and then they found themselves back in Spain, having spent 40 years in exile in Chile, only to find a Franco equivalent had taken over in Spain.
Okay.
You both said very fine words that few people would argue with. How can you explain the increasing fear that Labour is not getting any nearer 10 Downing Street?
Well, listen, Labour has got more members than we've ever had before. We're more active than we've ever been before. We have great hostility from the mainstream media than we probably ever had before. I think we are in a strong position to keep people united around the agenda we put forward on social justice, transformation, challenging and ending inequality in Britain, and giving people hope, bringing people together in hope of what can be achieved. What the right offer in our society is racism. They offer division. They offer something that is not very pleasant in society and will not actually solve any of the problems that people face. I think people have to have the confidence that we can deal with poverty, we can deal with unemployment, we can invest for the future, we can have a sustainable life for all of us, and we can work together with others around the world who think the same. Our unity of purpose, of peoples all over the world, United States, Europe, rest of the world, is something that I think is getting stronger. Don't be undermined by those that want to divide us. Unite together around the kind of world we could create. We had a sniff of that in the last general election. I wish to God we'd won the general election. I did everything personally I could to make sure we won that general election. But I tell you what, next time we're going to do it even bigger and even better. And what's more, we're going to win it, okay?
Well, we're drawing to a close. I want to thank the Edinburgh Book Festival people for giving us the space to create a dialogue, to have the best antidote possible to the toxic debates that take place in the airwaves, in the newspapers, in this highly polarized society, in this highly polarized Europe, in this highly polarized world. We need to stick together across European borders, across international borders, across even political party divisions, because we have a unique opportunity not to repeat the mistakes of our grandparents when, after a major financial crisis, that generation's 2008 that took place in 1929, a nationalist international rose up, taking advantage of the establishment's inanity and authoritarianism in order to drag the world into an abyss. We have an opportunity to stop this, and we are only going to do it through solidarity and rational debating. Thank you, Jeremy, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks very much. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
You heard a conversation between the former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, and the Labour leader and possibly next British Prime Minister, Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn and Varoufakis were recorded on August 20, 2018, at the Edinburgh Book Festival. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.